Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Anthony Brooks. On Tuesdays, we usually feature a short segment with the hosts of WBUR's Common Health blog. But today, we're going to do a much bigger segment because this week, there's some pretty big news coming out of a research lab at Massachusetts General Hospital.
Karen Weintraub, Common Health contributor, is here now. Welcome back, Karen.
Thanks.
So, Karen, the major news has to do with a paper published in the journal Nature Medicine, one that challenges some very long-held assumptions about female fertility?
Right. It's long been thought that women are born with all the eggs they're ever going to have. And once you reach a certain age, or if you have an illness and your fertility is affected, you have your ovaries removed, that's it. You've got no more chances at having another child. Well, what the new research suggests is that there may be, that we may have stem cells inside of us that could produce eggs even into adulthood.
So this is obviously quite contrary to what we all learned in high school bio, the fact that women can't produce more eggs as they, you know, as they go through life and that they go through menopause. That's one of the few remaining reasons why we don't have a lot of new mothers in their 50s, whereas men, we can theoretically produce viable sperm forever.
Exactly. And that's the amazing thing. If this research turns out to be true, then women theoretically could extend the window of fertility for decades.
Wow.
Okay, so I get the feeling that this also flies in the face of long-held medical dogma, which raises a lot of ethical and medical issues here. But Karen, let's first talk about the actual science that was done at MGH.
Sure. So the research was led by Dr. Jonathan Tilley, a reproductive biologist at MGH and Harvard Med School. And he's also the co-founder of a company that hopes to publicize, to put out a product related to this.
Called OvaScience.
OvaScience,
right?
Exactly. And it's locally based. Basically, the idea has to do with ovarian stem cells and whether we have these cells and what they're capable of doing.
Okay, so stem cells, just to remind us, are
right.
those unspecialized cells that can develop under the right circumstances into almost any form of tissue?
Exactly, exactly. And Tilley's team says it's done two things, discovered these cells in women so that we theoretically carry these cells, and also able to use these stem cells to develop early stage eggs in mice. So they haven't done it in women yet, but they have done it using female tissue, human tissues in mice.
Okay, so we actually spoke with Dr. Tilley a little earlier today to get a better handle on the details of the research, and here's how he described it.
We used ovarian tissue from young adult women, and that tissue was processed through a technique which allows us to purify and identify those very rare cells. But importantly, we also showed that these human ovary-derived egg precursor cells, once they're introduced back into adult human ovary tissue, are more than happy to perform their assigned role in the body, and that's to generate brand new crops of immature egg cells.
So there is some skepticism around Tilley's research. One of the areas of contention is exactly this point. Can these egg cells, can these stem cells mature into viable egg cells? And I spoke with Dr. David Keefe, an OBGYN at NYU's Langone Medical Center, who told me that every part of the body has stem cells, but those stem cells don't necessarily make eggs and don't mature into the body parts that we wish we had.
Well, I wondered about that because there are obviously stem cells in blood, bone marrow, essentially.
Exactly.
Stem cells in the spinal column, just all over, that can do different things. So I asked Dr. Tilley, you know, what makes him think that he can make viable mature eggs, and here's how he responded.
Yeah, it's actually a good point because we know that tissue-specific stem cells exist in many types of organs in our body. These cells that exist in the ovaries of women have their own prescribed function, that is to generate new egg cells. The way that we actually tested this was very interesting. We introduced a foreign gene called green fluorescent protein. It's actually a gene found in jellyfish. And what that gene does is makes these cells glow green, and that allows us to then track these cells or any egg cells that they may make. Those human egg stem cells were then injected into small pieces of adult human ovary tissue outside the body. And to try to mimic as closely as possible the normal sort of in vivo or inside the body situation, we then took those small pieces of ovary tissue and we grafted them into mice that were engineered to have no immune system. So those mice simply don't know they're carrying foreign tissue.
So they wouldn't reject it.
Correct. As we monitored that tissue that was then grafted, what we found is those injected cells carrying that gene that we could trace them, ended up generating a brand new crop of immature egg cells in the human ovary tissue in vivo.
Okay, so guys, so they were able to observe immature eggs glowing with jellyfish genes,
mm-hmm.
growing inside a human ovarian tissue grafted into a host mouse.
Confused yet?
Did I leave out any species there?
No, you got it spot on. And in fact, Dr. Tilley also told me that they've done similar experiments using mouse tissue the entire time,
okay.
so they didn't use the human ovary tissue, just to see how far they could get the eggs to develop. And when they did that, they grew mouse eggs that they were able to take beyond the immature stage, fully fertilize them, and develop healthy mouse embryos. But that was, again, only in the mouse model, as he said.
Right, and that's where the other experts are recommending caution. There's a long way between a stem cell and an egg. And so far, Tilley's group has only produced these immature cells. It's not clear if we can get to real, viable, mature egg cells. David Albertini of the Kansas University Medical Center told the New York Times that, quote, none of the criteria we use to establish a cell as a high-quality, unfertilized egg are satisfied here.
And science word, unfertilized egg is
an oocyte.
Spell that. Two O's.
Yes.
But so I put that same concern to Dr. Tilley, and he responded by saying that, yes, more research has to be done. But in the process, science might actually be able to understand a number of other questions about female fertility.
And I think the way to look at this new paper in Nature Medicine is it represents a first step, and quite a large first step, into the realm of human biology. And these kinds of questions will bear out in terms of understanding how ovaries use these cells, perhaps to control the size of the egg cell reserve that's present, and maybe how things like aging or chemotherapy might insult these cells enough to get them to shut down, thereby shutting off sort of that pipeline of new egg cell regeneration, and that would push the ovaries to fail.
Hmm. Are you suggesting here that your research might basically overturn things like menopause?
Well, I think there's a couple different ways to look at this. You know, 10 years ago, none of these concepts that we're discussing now were even on the table because these cells had not even been identified. You know, 10 years later, which I suppose in scientific terms isn't really that long, we now have, I think, a host of opportunities in front of us to begin to pull apart, not just in the context of human fertility, but also perhaps in the context of ovarian aging, and that is the primary driver behind menopause. You know, I do want to emphasize that, you know, we still have quite a bit of work in front of us for certain aspects of these types of follow-up experiments. For example, we're now testing in collaboration with a group in the University of Edinburgh in Scotland whether or not these immature egg cells produced by these newly discovered cells in humans are able to be matured outside the body to the point of generating a fertilization-competent egg. Now, those kinds of experiments are ongoing and certainly going to take many years to accomplish.
I mean, you've been at the leading edge of fertility science for quite some time, and your previous research, even though it was along different lines, has received intense criticism. Fellow scientists saying they were unable to replicate the results of your other findings in other areas of investigation. So I wonder, do you anticipate a similar level of criticism about this new research?
Yeah, I would comment on that. The criticisms that have been levied against our work in the past really emanated from the earlier studies that we did using mouse models, which were published in published in Nature in 2004, and then published in a journal called Cell in 2005. And I would emphasize that there's a lot of misconception out there about those kinds of statements, because there is not one paper out there that has said they can't repeat any of those findings. So a lot of the commentary, critical and otherwise, that surrounds this work, the debate, I think more emanates from the fact that this is a complete change in thinking of a basic concept in our field that has really withstood 50 years of time. And, you know, introducing a new concept, a new change so fundamental to this field that has guided every experiment conducted, every way that clinical management of fertility has been handled, is going to take some time for the field to get used to.
So, Karen, science takes time.
Right.
I suppose that's the takeaway of virtually every common health conversation. But here's the thing, is that any news about a breakthrough in female fertility matters a lot to women right now who don't have very much time. They're infertile now.
Right. And I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for help if you're currently infertile. This might help my young teenage daughter, but it probably won't help people my age.
Gotcha.
And that's a lot of people. I mean,
it is roughly 10% of American families. One in six couples is infertile.
Wow.
So it's a lot of people with a lot of hopes and dreams. In the short term, what it may help is in terms of research, understanding, as he was saying, understanding the process of fertilization, what an egg really is. So there may be benefits in the interim, but probably not for helping immediate infertility.
So that's the last question I actually asked Dr. Tilley, is he giving women now false hope?
Yeah, Meghna, it's a very important point because, you know, nothing in this paper should be construed as we're now ready to begin clinical practice tomorrow based on these technologies. As I mentioned to you, you know, the possibility of using these newly discovered cells that are in women's ovaries for the generation of functional eggs and baby making, so to speak, is many years down the road. We have a lot of work in front of us to get to that point. So I'm very much concerned about the prospects of not falsely raising hope. You know, I'm actually a cancer survivor myself. I've dealt with these personal things myself in my past. I'm blessed with three beautiful, healthy children. And I think I have a somewhat different insight on this than most people believe, because I've been there. I've been through these types of things, and I understand the issues that these patients face. And while we don't want to raise false hope, I think it's important to give the idea that there is still some hope out there, and sometimes that's all you need to get through it.
Dr. Jonathan Tilley, thank you so much.
Meghna, it's been a pleasure to speak with you.
So that's Dr. Jonathan Tilley. He's a reproductive biologist at the Harvard Medical School and chief of research at Mass General Hospital's Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and the lead researcher of that MGH team that says it's extracted stem cells from human ovaries and made those cells generate new human eggs. And that study appears in the journal Nature Medicine. Karen Weintraub of our Common Health blog covered it for us. So listeners, that's the science. But what are the societal implications of medicine that says it's heading down the path of turning back the clock on female fertility? There are lots of reasons why women may become infertile at a variety of ages. But is this medicine, is this development a good thing? Should we be exhilarated by the thought or cautious that maybe women who are perhaps postmenopausal might actually be able to develop their own eggs? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Karen Weintraub is with us again, and joining us now is Barbara Katz-Rothman. She's a professor of sociology at the City University of New York and author of numerous books, including Recreating Motherhood. Professor Rothman, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi there.
So the issue of fertility is a very fraught and complex one. What's your first reaction to this idea that, you know, as the media has been putting it, science might be able to turn back the clock on female fertility?
Well, the idea that you can maybe make it possible for women to have babies of their own eggs in their 50s or 60s or whatever, 80s, I don't know, is kind of repeating some patterns that we established with men as maybe not our best ideas of socially doing parenting.
Kind of repeating a pattern.
Yeah, you know, we had a pattern in men that, given the way that we set up work and careers, it was hard for men to be active parents. So what they did was have wives who did that stuff for them, and they didn't really spend a lot of time with their kids. They devoted their time to their careers. And then we saw among some men a phenomenon of a second family later on. So they remarried, they found themselves a young woman, they had kids, they had the children when they were in a time and space in their life where they could really enjoy them.
But that often involved a woman who was of childbearing age.
Exactly. That involved, one of those parents was 20, 30 years old, likely to be there as the kids grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Setting this up now and saying, oh, this is a pattern women could follow too. We could have postpone our children because we haven't got the time to raise them and we don't have wives. So we can just wait till we're in our 50s and our careers are nice and calm and settled and we'll have the time to do this. Kind of intriguing. I don't think most of us are thinking those women are going to do that with partners who are in their 20s and 30s. So what we're talking about is children who will be in grade school as their parents retire, children who will lose their parents. I mean, we're, you know, I'm 60-something. I know.
I've been told 60 is the new 40.
50, right, whatever. But you know what? 80's the old 80. I mean,
well, let me.
You die. We don't live forever. The idea that these children are going to be left without parents at some point, and for sure, their children aren't going to have grandparents. The kind of setting something up, because socially we've made it so incredibly difficult for people to have children when the body's good for that.
Okay, hang on there for just a second, because I want to bring in Karen Weintraub back into this conversation. So that's one perspective on the potential impact that the long-term
right.
Developments of this research could have, basically older mothers.
Right.
But there are, you know, a number of reasons why women become infertile at childbearing age. I mean,
exactly.
Can you go over some of those
sure.
reasons?
Sure, so cancer is the obvious one. Women who have to have chemotherapy and either have some their ovaries removed and tissue preserved, or want to have children at a later date. So that's the big one, is cancer.
Okay. Well, the reason why I wanted to bring that up is, Professor Katz Rothman, I'm going to ask you about this too, but it seems to me, does this new development differ markedly from other recent advancements we've had in fertility treatments? I mean, frozen embryos seem to be kind of quite common now as a procedure.
Right, and IVF is actually getting much more successful now. It's still, I was told earlier today by Boston IVF that it used to be 15% of IVF succeeded, now we're up to 45%. So the chances are getting a lot better, and the chances of having a healthy baby are getting better. So, you know, in the short term, certainly that's going to be a more viable solution to infertility than Tilly's research.
And a healthy baby through IVF at a later stage of impregnation?
Theoretically, right. I mean, IVF is generally used by women in their late 30s, early 40s.
Okay, so Professor Katz Rothman, I mean, in that case, how does what we're hearing differ from what's already been done?
Yeah, you were asking about the older mother part of it.
Yeah.
Alternative treatments for infertility at earlier ages, maybe this is a good route to go, maybe it isn't. He's developing his project, his business, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, I don't know. It doesn't seem to offer anything. I mean, he says he's selling hope, but we've already got the technologies of hope for a young woman who's about to have chemo. She can, at this point, we know how to freeze and save. I don't think it's really offering anything particularly new for the kind of expected infertility post-cancer.
But you raised a very compelling point, and we originally heard you on NPR's report yesterday when they were talking about Dr. Tilly's research, and this idea that society is focusing its research efforts on how to make it easier for older women to remain fertile versus making it easier for women when they're younger to actually have babies is an interesting one. Can you tell me a little bit more about your take on that?
Yeah, I'm a sociologist, and I see we have a huge social problem here, and instead of talking about how to solve it socially, we start talking about technological fixes. So, yeah, I mean, it's not really that hard to imagine how to make a family-friendly society. Many other countries around the world have done it. It's certainly possible for people to have children and go to school and have jobs. No, they can't do 70-hour-a-week jobs, but I don't think we particularly need them to do that. We could certainly create social systems that made it possible, little daycare that's ordinary everywhere else in the world pretty much, for people to have some services available when they're having their kids, a little flexible family time, it's not out of the question. There's a lot of really good reasons why somebody should have children when they're in their 20s and their 30s.
Those reasons are, no one's going to, I feel like maybe few people might dispute those reasons, no one's really going to wholeheartedly dispute those reasons, I guess is what I meant to say. But I hear you say absolutely daycare, supporting young women while they're in the workplace, all those things would absolutely help women in their 20s, say at peak fertility, want to start families versus women in their 30s or 40s even. But it's so easy to say and yet so hard to do. I mean, Karen, I can't tell you how many women I know who are my age who only maybe recently started a family or are still
right.
thinking about it because they just can't see society moving in a way where they can step out of the workplace for a long time.
Well, and we've also sort of deferred being a grown-up for a long time. I mean, I didn't feel like I was even marginally a grown-up till I hit 30. So, you know.
Yeah. I'm with you.
That's
there.
our guy over there.
I turn 30 next month.
Okay.
I'm right there with
Congratulations.
You.
Yeah. Well, we've organized ourselves that way. We really have. We've made a society in which that's the way it works for some people. And then think that, well, what we need to do is to change the body. We can't change the society to meet the body. We'll have to change the body to meet the society. And for me, it's not only the declining fertility. People really do still get old and die. We haven't fixed that yet. And I don't know about you, but I mean, it's kind of nice to have grown-up people around when you're a little older yourself. It's okay to have grandparents for your children. It's okay to have your parents around when you're in your 30s and your 40s.
It's also a lot harder to chase after those children when you're in your 50s.
Well, there's that. And the other thing that's kind of interesting about all of this is this extraordinary focus on what makes a child yours is the genetics. So part of what's happening here is it's not just that women in their 50s and 60s fail to produce eggs. It's also no picnic to be pregnant when you're 65, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the notion, we're probably going to end up, you know, outsourcing that one to India or something and saying, okay, just send me a baby of my egg when it's done.
But this is very brave new world for me.
Well, it's a very old world for men, actually. It's the, you don't have to really deal with this kid until it's at least learning to read or something. When it's more or less coming up on teachable young adult, then you claim it. It's got your name, it's, you know, got your nose, it's genetically yours, and you named it, and let somebody else raise it, and then because it's genetically yours, then it's important.
Karen Weintraub, let me just ask you one more medical question here, because I know we have been focusing on sort of the possibility of postmenopausal women still developing eggs, and I just want to once again acknowledge that this research could have an impact on women who are infertile regardless
exactly.
of reason.
Exactly.
But regarding the older mother part, aren't there biological reasons why just the toll of pregnancy on the woman's body increases at older ages?
Sure. I mean, there are plenty of them. And the quality of the eggs diminish. One of the potential promises of this work is that you could take a piece of an immature egg and stick it into the older egg and freshen it up, as it were, and make it work better. But again, as you say, you're still putting it into a 50-year-old body. And what is the toll of that? I think, I don't know these numbers off the top of my head, but diabetes risk increases. A lot of health problems increase in older parents.
Mm. Barbara Katz-Rothman, just got a couple seconds to go. Last question to you. You've got a very provocative take on this and basically calling for a restructuring of how society views women and motherhood. Men and fatherhood.
Time for men to raise their children also. Well, I'm talking about parents. Friendly, not just woman-friendly societies.
Oh, I hear you when you say that that maybe those things aren't happening with the speed that you'd like them to, but science is. So I wonder, in the short run, as a sociologist, what do you see are the potential impacts if the science goes forward?
Well, the science isn't going to be there next week. I mean, even Tilly is saying that. It's not that anybody who is now dealing with menopause can say, oh, phew, I can wait a couple of years and have a baby. This isn't going to be here in any big hurry. So I honestly think that we need to be thinking more about making the kinds of adjustments that we need to do socially rather than seeking the technology to solve this.
Mm, interesting, though, the focus on the body versus the focus on society.
Barbara, yeah, what's malleable and what's not?
Barbara Katz-Rothman is a professor of sociology at the City University of New York and author of Recreating Motherhood. Professor Katz-Rothman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Karen Weintraub is health and science journalist based in Cambridge and also a contributor to WBUR's Common Health blog. Karen, thank you as well.
Great to be here.
Listeners, keep your comments coming for me. Didn't get any calls, but I want to hear what you have to say on radioboston.org. There's also a link to Karen's Common Health article there. Stay with us because coming up, the unlikely collaboration of a bluegrass musician and a klezmer legend. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.